The Nick Handley Show.
Hey, who wants to have some fun?
I do.
Now, are you just saying you want to have fun, or do you really want to have fun?
I really want to have fun. I'm just saying I want to have some fun.
AM 590, ESPN Omaha.
How about that? If you had Ron Prince as the coach of Howard, let me buy you a beer. That is the first Ron Prince news that I have heard since he didn't work out at Kansas State. He was kind of floating around as a staffer at some of the NFL organizations. How about that? Ron Prince, it's not good news. I'm not trying to downplay it, that he has been placed on leave amid investigation of player mistreatment. But I'm trying to remember where I was within the last year. Somebody, and this will happen every now and then when I'm talking with my friends, they just assume that if you do a sports talk show, that you have useless knowledge of things. And somebody had asked me, hey, where's Ron Prince at these days? I know he's coaching somewhere. Where is he at? And I didn't even want to look it up. I said, I have no idea. And they were disappointed. They're like, come on, you of all people should know. Like, why should I of all people know where Ron Prince is? Well, here's your answer. He was at Howard as the head football coach, but he has now been placed on administrative leave as they are investigating reported allegations of verbal abuse and intimidation. The statement from Athletic Director Kerry Davis says, Howard University is committed to ensuring our athletic programs reflect Howard's core mission and values and to ensuring the well-being and success of all student-athletes. Howard's 1-8, by the way. TJ, do you know what conference Howard plays in?
The MEAC,
yes,
would be my guess.
You are. Oh, my God. I'm buying you a beer now. Good job. Because I wouldn't have known that.
But if you had to ask me what MEAC stands for, not sure I could tell you.
That's another good question.
The Mid-American, Eastern,
the
Atlantic.
Eastern? Do they play football out in the Middle East? The Middle Eastern Athletic Conference, where player mistreatment is actually encouraged. No, it's not. It's frowned upon. And it's got old Ron Prince in trouble there. But how about that? Did you know where Ron Prince was?
No, I had no idea. I figured he was probably retired, actually.
I remember seeing him on an NFL sideline. In fact, I think, was it after his time at Kansas State? I think he might have been with the Detroit Lions for a little bit. I don't know why I want to say he was with Detroit for a little bit. But yeah.
It's a winning organization to go to.
Well, get this, though. This is an interesting story here. The trouble at Howard had actually come to surface earlier this season when Kalen Newton, younger brother,
yeah, that's right,
of Cam Newton.
Yeah. Because I remember Frank Solich played Howard last year.
Yep.
Newton was playing there. Yeah.
And he's the reigning MEAC Offensive Player of the Year. He was among several players to enter the transfer portal just 5 games into the season. A total of 17 Howard players have entered the transfer portal since Prince was hired. Isn't that something?
It's a lot.
So I guess he was at Rutgers for a little bit.
Oh, man.
Sounds about right. He was a offensive analyst for Michigan. And then, yes, several NFL gigs. I didn't know he was at Michigan. The Rutgers things make sense. I really don't mean to make light of what is a serious situation when it comes to player mistreatment. But nobody really does it better than Rutgers University.
Don't have a perfect record with player treatment.
No, that's why I'm saying Rutgers is bad.
Their athletic director and basketball coach.
Well, have you heard about the softball thing?
No.
Oh, they got a bad softball thing. This broke, I think I saw the story last week, maybe middle or end of last week, where it's a husband and wife that are the coaches at Rutgers. Man, if you get a chance to read this, it's bad. Like some of the things that they're at least, and I don't want to say they did this because I don't know, and this is what they're being accused of doing. But there's one report, one of the student athletes, actually a handful of the student athletes for the Rutgers softball team said that the husband, who's like a volunteer assistant, apparently at one point they were in a bus and he made reference of it smelling like, we'll just think of women problems. Yeah. He walked in the bus, says, it smells like that. I mean, just like one example of a bunch of different things.
It's not smart to say.
Making people run till they puke. I guess two players within a workout had passed out within seconds of each other. And instead of giving them medical attention, allegedly, again, they were actually in the players' faces while they were passed out, telling them to get up and finish the workout. Like, so here was the most bizarre thing about this. The current Rutgers athletic director, when this story was ran initially from these students that went to this news outlet, apparently the athletic director sent the reporter who was covering this a text that was just profanity-laced. I mean, even if you are trying to defend your coaches and you know that this is something that is not going on in your program, to reach out to the media and just shred them and just, you know, MFing them and this and that, like, that's not a good look.
No.
Like, I feel like even when you know there is no substance to those types of complaints, like, remember what Rhonda Revelle was kind of going through with some reports of player mistreatment or at least some kind of concerns there. Can you imagine if Bill Moose knew that it was, like, unfounded and it wasn't true? Like, if he wrote to the Omaha World Herald or the Lincoln Journal Star reporters who were covering it and just started MFing them? Like, you bunch of hatchet, you know what's like, I mean, you can't conduct yourself like that.
No.
And then apparently he had, like, an hour later sent a text back, like, apologizing for his language, but still defending the coaches. Like, can Rutgers ever get this thing right?
Okay, yeah, so sticking with Rutgers here, in Stu Pospisil, he told me he was at state volleyball, said 3 o'clock would work, but obviously he's probably getting
that's
caught up with
his
too. Job here. So I saw the reports yesterday that Greg Schiano is back to meeting with Rutgers Athletics. I can't tell you much about the history of Rutgers football other than Greg Schiano to on, where it hasn't been bad, and that apparently they were the first ever college football game against Princeton, because 150 years, that game has been noted a lot.
Look at you.
Yeah, there you go. They mentioned that a lot during the Miami-Ohio game last night. So I don't know the history of Rutgers football, but to me, whenever they were good, and maybe the best they were
Ray
been,
Rice. All you need to know.
Was Greg Schiano.
Greg Schiano, Ray Rice. Yep.
So I see the appeal of trying to bring back Greg Schiano, and maybe Greg Schiano is even, man, this is where I had success, where there hadn't been any, people treat me like a king around here.
Mm-hmm.
But do both sides really want to go back to that? I mean, does Greg Schiano really want to get back involved with Rutgers Athletics, knowing, like, all this off-the-field stuff? Or does he just, like, put that stuff aside and just, like, ah, man, I made this into a one-on-one, so I can do it again?
It's a fair question, because I feel like Greg Schiano's name is not as toxic as it was, like, 3 or 4 years ago. Remember the whole MRSA thing going on when he was the head coach at Tampa Bay? You know, they had that whole, like, bacterial issue, and then there okay, so they, I mean, I'm not saying, well, Greg Schiano is such a bad coach that all of a sudden they have a very odd bacterial infection in their locker room. Okay, I'm not trying to say, but there was a lot of bad ink about Tampa Bay, they were bad under Greg Schiano. Every time a team would take the victory formation, remember, he would have his defensive teams, like, basically charge the snap, as opposed to just being like, okay, yeah, congratulations, Slick. And he said, well, that's something we did at Rutgers. I taught the guys to play to the whistle, even if it's in the victory formation. Like, come on, dude, really? Lighten up, Francis. Oh, wait, that's a good time to use that.
Lighten up, Francis.
So I just think that then, and God, when was this? This would have been like, what, two? Look up, when was he at Tampa Bay? Because it was like 2007, 8, I think is when it was. Right around then, maybe 2009? It might have been more recent. But I know that there was just sort of a toxic nature.
2012 and 2013.
Okay, so it was 2012, 2013. Okay, so that's a little bit more recent. Since then, he's been a staffer for some good programs. Of course, he's with Ohio State recently. And I think the way the whole Tennessee thing went down, where they had at least an agreement, it was reported that they were just finalizing some things that he was going to be announced as the new coach of the University of Tennessee. And then we, in fact, we just discussed this a couple days ago. Tennessee took to Twitter. The fans took the social media mob won out, and they tried to link Greg Schiano to the Jerry Sandusky Penn State thing, which, yeah, technically he was there for some of those years. And it's easy to say, well, if you were a coach at Penn State when Jerry Sandusky was there, then you knew what was going on. And I think that's a dangerous assumption, because apparently only a few coaches really knew what was going on, because apparently they didn't like to talk about it at all. They just wanted the problem to go away. So to say that, well, Greg Schiano was there, so, you know, if so facto, he's an enabler. No, the Tennessee fans, if Greg Schiano was a stud defensive coordinator and the natural next step for Schiano was for him to be a head coach at a major program, or let's just say that guy was still at Rutgers, he was having just so much success, and he was ready to take on a Power 5, big old SEC school. The Tennessee Volunteer fans that took to social media on this thing, there's no way they would have looked at that and said, yeah, this outrages me. No, because they thought he was already damaged goods because of what happened in Tampa Bay. They didn't think he was a good coach. Had nothing to do with the fact that he was on the coaching staff for some years when Jerry Sandusky was there. That was the most transparent thing. And I feel like outside the Tennessee football fan base, a lot of people kind of looked at Greg Schiano as, man, that's not right. Like, that guy got a raw deal. I mean, he obviously earned the opportunity to be the coach. He obviously did some things in the interview process that won over decision makers for that job. Yet it was the fans that didn't want him because they felt like, well, he's not good enough to be the coach. Had nothing to do with what they were claiming. And so I feel like the temperature on Greg Schiano, I feel like it's a little bit better than it was before that whole thing went down. And I feel like people have kind of forgot about the disaster that was in the NFL. And let's be real. I mean, Nick Saban was a terrible NFL coach. Nick Saban is the best coach in college football, and he was awful in the NFL. So I think you can survive that. You can totally survive that as long as you kind of get back in the college game and sort of go the route that Schiano is. So I do think Schiano and Rutgers could be good, because the last time they had any kind of success, he was a part of that.
Yeah, and again, no idea if maybe Rutgers had a better coach in the 1920s or something, but if Greg Schiano is their best coach ever, he was only one game above 500 in his 11 years there, 68-67. 28-48 in conference play, and that's not Big Ten conference play. That was Big East conference play. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember back to those Big East football days with, like, UConn, Rutgers, West Virginia, I think. Not great, but they did. 2006, he went 11-2. They finished 12th in the coaches and AP poll, so it's actually pretty good for Rutgers football.
What was do you have in front of you his best record when he was with Rutgers?
11-2.
Okay, that was the Ray Rice team, right? I'm pretty sure it was. I remember watching them on, like, because you would see them on Thursday night games, you know, like weeknight games. I remember watching them in a couple of spots, and they were good. That was when I first looked at Rutgers football and thought, man, that's not a bad team. And a lot of people were talking
about... Yeah, Ray Rice was a sophomore that year.
Okay. I remember a lot of people talking about how he capitalized on really that section of the country and got a lot of good recruits out of New Jersey and that entire East Coast area. And he was able to recruit it very well. So I think that if you're looking for some kind of reassurance about Greg Schiano this time around, he already kind of had a blueprint. And I feel like now his name, even though, it wasn't good in the NFL, he spent time as an NFL head coach. He was a highly regarded defensive coach for Ohio State, being a part of those types of recruiting visits and establishing those types of connections. I feel like his influence is probably even bigger now than it was when he first kind of got things at least somewhat out of the doldrums there with Rutgers his first time around. So I can see this as a positive. Where I'm probably most concerned about, and I cannot believe we're spending this much time talking about Rutgers, but what I'm most concerned about is, again, if you have not read this softball story, it's NJ.com, our friends at NJ.com, who we talk about when we do talk some Big Ten and New York Giants stuff and Rutgers stuff. They wrote the report. They had these claims brought to them. Hello? And I look at what they have in place for their leadership in their athletic department. And I don't know anything about Patrick Hobbs. Okay, I don't know anything about their deputy director of athletics, Sarah Bumgarner. I don't know anything about them. I don't know where they came from. I don't know what their history is. But this whole softball allegation thing really put them in a very bad light. And so I don't think you have to worry about who the next football coach is. I think they still got some leadership issues when it comes to athletics. But we'll see. All right, going to talk to Stu Pospisil coming up next. And we'll get the latest on not only state volleyball, but also some high school football playoffs. Big matchups coming up tomorrow night in classes A, B, and C. We'll get to that next. Troutness tweets the show and says, don't worry, the Rutgers talk is interesting. Nothing else to do on a bye week. Thanks, man. I'm glad we weren't turning anybody away. I just said it's probably the only time Rutgers is interesting, but I feel like they're only interesting when it comes to, like, controversy. And I think there's still stuff going on there. All right, a guy who I know would never big league us unless he had to is Stu Pospisil of the Omaha World Herald. We're going to be talking to him a little bit ago. But, Stu, you got some breaking news in the state volleyball championships. What's going on out there?
Well, the number one team in the state got beaten 4 sets by this Miller North team that I think has a chip on its shoulder out for Mission. You know, they're the defending champions, but they took care of Papios Monarchs 3-1, gave up the first set, and then rolled in the next two, and I believe the fourth set score was 25-16. So none of those three were, or none of the last two were that close. If I remember right, the second set was closer, like maybe 25-22. But huge upset in the fact that it goes against the seedings, but you got the defending champion, and you know they're the team that had 14 losses assessed to them for playing an eligible player, and it looks like that's motivating.
You'll have to remind me on this. Now, I know Miller North sort of had a little bit of a run recently. They were good. Papillion and Papillion South have been very solid here before, too. So is it just kind of taking turns on which program is just a little bit better?
It seems like it. Yeah, I mean, Miller North, I think, has won either 2 of the last 3 or 3 of the last 4. Mm-hmm. Papio's been in there. You know, Marion's been consistently in the hunt. Miller North took out the Crusaders and districts again because the seeding issues that came with the, you know, Miller North during the season was 24-10, but with the 14 forfeits, they go to 10-24. So now they're 11-24 officially, and they're going to play the winner of this next matchup between Gretna and Millard West. And honestly, from Mike Patterson's perspective, the top team in the state right now is still alive. It's number 2 Scott, and they just hammered Hastings. They gave the Skyhawks gave up 13 points in 3 games.
Okay, I need to know about this. Now, what happened with this Miller North team with having to forfeit some wins here?
There's a May 1st clause in the transfer rules for the state. And a player from Miller North from last year, her family put her on, said they were going to transfer her to Burke. So she goes on the May 1st transfer list. Kind of think of it like the NCAA portal.
You're right.
For transfers. Well, in the interim, after her name goes on, a counselor at the school at Miller North suggests that she stay and finish. And so the family agrees, but her name is on that list. And Miller North, for some reason, did not catch it, and because she has to sit out 90 days. If you return to your home school, your home district school, after going on that May 1st list, you know, kind of taking yourself out of the portal, you still have to sit 90 days under state rule.
Okay.
So Miller North was probably derelict, perhaps, in not going to that list and checking to make sure that, you know, who was on that May 1st list, and then checking against its roster, you know, enrollment roster for the whole school. Because you got kids doing this all the time. They're you know, any transfer basically from school to school without a parent move requires you to go on this May 1st list. So clerical error, long story short, somebody turns in the infraction mid-season. Millard North loses 14 victories. They were sitting fourth in the wild card standings at the time in the point standings. They dropped into the 20s. They go to the Metro Final as like a 13 seed in the conference tourney. So they go to the final there, and then in districts, they're like a number 22 seed and playing Omaha Marion in the first round of districts, knocked out Marion in five. Marion ends up not going to state because they can't get the wild card.
Mm.
And now Miller North takes out another top team here. So, you know, the Mustangs still have their title hopes alive, and the Monarchs are going home.
Wow. That is a major development.
It's strange.
Yes, it is. And in state volleyball, stay tuned there. I want to get your thoughts, though. We got some high school playoffs. They resume tomorrow night in Classes A, B, and C. And I want to start in Class A, where for the most part it was chalk. I know in Class B it was straight-up chalk in the first round. But some of the more intriguing matchups, I want to start with Omaha Burke taking on Bellevue West. Obviously, Bellevue West has looked the part, even though with a four seed. But when you do see them taking on Burke, do you anticipate this with the talent on both of these teams? This should be one of the better ones?
Oh, I like all four matchups. But, you know, this one's got the star quality. Let's be honest. You got the top two receivers and the top two passers in Class A. And mm-hmm. We all know who the receivers are. But it's a pair of Xaviers, one with an X and one with a Z, and maybe that's the receiver positions they play in college. I don't know. But you got Xavier Watts with a Z, Xavier Best with a Z. And we're going to see those two go at each other when Xavier Best is on offense. Xavier Watts, who I put on defense last year for all Nebraska, is on defense for Burke. That's going to be a terrific one-on-one matchup. You know, I mean, that I'm sending Dirk Chatlin to that game tomorrow, and that was one of the carrots I put out there. Is you got to see those two go at it, and you got two top quarterbacks in Nate Lanz, and actually both these kids were at different schools last year. The quarterbacks, Nate Lanz was at Millard West, and Reed Burke was at Prep. And now here they are with their teams in the state quarterfinals.
The other one that I'm kind of curious about is because I have not heard as much about Lincoln Southeast this year, even though they come in as a number two seed, taking on a talented West Side team. They've got athletes. We know that. Do you think West Side, I mean, first of all, would it be an upset if West Side is able to win? And do you think Lincoln Southeast is maybe kind of that forgotten team out of all this?
I don't think they're the forgotten team. You know, they could be undefeated. In the season opener, they had a field goal taken off the board because Xavier Watts with an X jumped offside, killed the play. Southeastern made the field goal. They had to re-kick from 5 yards shorter because the play was dead. The kid missed the field goal, and Burke wins 16-14. Now, Southeast then beat Westside 22-17 after trailing 17-7 going to the fourth quarter. So those three teams, when they throw Burke in there, are really close together. And I would say the X factor for Westside is Devontae Dickerson, who has his offers from LSU and Ohio State look really good right now, don't they?
Yeah.
When you're looking at the college football playoff standings. But he was dinged up, banged up early in the season. He had a good week last week in the first round. If he can break a couple big plays, I think it's going to be hard on Southeast to play catch up again. You know, last time Westside lost Holmstrom, it's a good two-way player late in the third quarter, and that helped Southeast come back. You know, I'm picking Southeast, but a Westside win would not be out of the consideration.
All right, lastly, Stu, I want to get your thoughts, though. Millard West, as they are the number one seed, they've looked very impressive, obviously. When you look at their matchup tomorrow night, is there any concern that Elkhorn South could pull off that upset?
Oh, again, you know, if Elkhorn South is a little opportunistic, Millard West has taken care of the ball decently, well, better than decently, and has only given up 180 points a game. I think that's the turning point, yards. That's the key factor there, is how much can Elkhorn South dent Millard West's defense, and can they get into the end zone? Eli Husted is there, the Storm's leading rusher and receiver. Elliot Brown is their quarterback. He's, I think his touchdown to interception ratio, however, is like 13 to 10. So he's got to take care of the ball. And Millard West is very good on defense. They've got the ball hawks, and you know, with Tristan Gomes on offense as Millard West quarterback, he's got two very good receivers, and they play all over the place, too, in Dallas Beanham and Caden Oderman. So I think Elkhorn South is going to have to try and keep this close and, you know, kind of show up with their lines. I think Millard West maybe has the best set of lines in Class A, but remember, Elkhorn South's got a couple highly touted young linemen, Zadica and Husker commit Teddy Prochaska. They're going to have to step up tomorrow night against one of the top defenses in the state.
Very busy time for the hardworking folks, the Omaha World Herald, giving you all of your high school coverage. State volleyball going on. State playoffs continue. I know Classes D got underway this week, again, or resumed this week, and now you got the big Class A, B, and C matchups tomorrow, resuming high school football playoffs. Go to theomaha.com for all of the latest. Stu, appreciate it. Hang in there. We'll talk to you soon.
I appreciate it. And I would never big leak you guys. So
we know that. Appreciate it, Stu. So how about that? Millard North, the big upset over Papillion in high school state volleyball, the number one seed going down right out of the gate. Okay, we are going to switch from high school sports to a big hockey weekend. It's the number 20-ranked UNO Mavericks taking on 11th-ranked Wisconsin at Baxter Arena on Friday. We're going to talk to the head coach, Mike Gabinet, for the Mavericks. He joins me next. And the man we're about to bring on the show, last time we talked to him, right, this season was getting ready, we said, hey, you know, a lot of people not really sure about this team, you know, not a lot of expectations around this team. He said, you know what, I could do my part in kind of keeping those things tempered. But he said there was something about this team that he really liked. Young group, and we welcome in Mike Gabinet, head coach of the Mavericks. Coach, I was just talking about how when I talked to you last time, before that Alabama-Huntsville series, you said, you know, there's something about this team that I really like. I think people are going to maybe be somewhat impressed, maybe surprised how this team looks. And so far, you guys are 4-1-1. I don't know if you guys had a number in mind when it came to those first few series, but a lot of quality hockey we've seen out of this group so far.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, you know, I just, again, you know, just dealing with the players and just, you know, just felt like we were organized this year and really liked obviously the returning players, but also the influx of 12 new faces there and their attitudes, their commitment level and work ethic. And they've just been getting better. They've just been getting better daily improvements. So it's been fun to work and grow, and obviously lots left to do. And we'll get a very, very talented team in to play against this weekend. But, you know, we're taking small steps in the right direction.
I was reading something that former Mav coach Mike Kemp said about this group, and he said it reminded him a lot of the teams that he had early when this program got started back in the late 90s, and that is kind of, as you pointed out, a work ethic, a group that they know that, you know, maybe people aren't necessarily looking at them as the most talented team in the NCHC, so they're kind of trying to maybe make it their thing to outwork everybody, not cutting corners. Is that kind of what you've seen so far with this group?
Yeah, the longer I coach, the more I almost want to recategorize talent and add work ethic into that equation, because you know, when you're dealing with individuals that are committed to getting better, you know, they do, that's what they do, they get better. And obviously talent's almost a gift, and work ethic's a choice. And so it's really fun to watch these guys play. And like you said, yeah, when, you know, some of our, when I was here as a freshman, a lot of our older players, you know, Dave Noel Brunet, who's on staff with me, and Some of the other, you know, guys that I look up to when I played here as a freshman, I mean, they were very, very hardworking players, and they kind of set that tone for how you played. And we were fortunate to have guys like, you know, then Andrew Wong and Dan Ellis and coming to the group, and you add a sprinkle a little bit of, you know, quote unquote talent into the mix there. And it's a great combination. So, you know, we're fortunate to have a lot of these guys that are showing up competing every day and hungry to get better.
All right, Gabs, you can laugh at me if you want, but I was watching that first series against Alabama Huntsville, and there were a lot of things that were kind of sticking out to me. And I know this is probably rare right out of the gate, and we talked about how little time you guys have to prepare for the start of the season compared to other sports. It looked like just the passing seemed a little bit more crisp than what we saw the last couple of years. It seemed like the spacing was pretty decent. And it just seemed like there were things that you don't typically see in the first weekend of college hockey just because things are maybe still out of sorts. I just felt like a lot of little things in that Huntsville series really kind of showed up to where it looked a lot cleaner than maybe what we've seen in the past. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just, again, comes back to just the summertime and just having adequate time to prepare. You know, when I step back and look at I'm starting my third year here, you know, that first year you're hiring a brand new staff. And then obviously after my first year there, we had a kind of a staff turnover there with one of our assistant coaches leaving for another program, and it threw a kind of a curveball to a lot of things. So then you're kind of, you know, panicking that whole summer with recruiting and hiring another person. And so really this summer was the first summer that I've had as a head coach to have the time to just really get comfortable with preparing properly, being organized, not hiring people, getting an incoming group here for July. And I think it's really, you know, short early on here where, you know, you can tell that, you know, practice has been great and guys have been getting better. So again, for me, just kind of reflecting back, it's sure been nice to see the progress made from an organizational standpoint as well.
Talking with Mike Gabinet, the UNO hockey coach. Mavs big weekend at Baxter Arena starting tomorrow night as they'll take on 11th-ranked Wisconsin, 7:07 puck drop both nights. Gabs, the point of emphasis, we talked about this before the season. We talked a lot about it last year. Overall defense play, what have you noticed so far from that group?
Yeah, I think, again, if you look at our leadership group with Dean Stewart and Ryan Jones back there, obviously two players with extremely talented individuals, but very, very good leaders and work ethic. And you know, we got those guys with Nate Konepke back and an influence of a couple younger guys with Brendan Scallion and Kirby Proctor. And then we got Johnny Schultz and Jason Smallage and a couple of their new guys in the mix. So from a D-core standpoint, I, you know, really like the way they've been playing so far, and just a team mindset of protecting the middle ice, being responsible with the puck, and playing five tight in that D zone and really trying to limit their opportunities. And as the competition gets harder, that's, you know, gets more difficult. So you really have to have that commitment. We've talked about it from day one this year, just really being strong defensively and working from our back end out. And you know, so far so good, just on making that improvement from last season.
Some of the freshmen that have stood out, one of the guys, Joey Abate, has made his three goals really count so far this year. What have you liked about his transition into the college game so far?
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, came out of junior as a pretty good junior player, but by no means a superstar coming out of junior or a highly drafted player by any means. But again, just one of those guys we identified as high character individual that skates well, has got a great work ethic, and he's not afraid. You know, we got four or five freshmen that they will not be afraid when contact is made. And they're looking forward to a physical game and a highly competitive game and really, you know, wanting to compete head to head with their competition. And he's one of those guys. If you watch his game on Alaska, he, you know, wins the faceoff, gets knocked down, beat their guys up, refuses to get boxed out, going to net front, gets a rebound and puts it in. I mean, that's Maverick hockey in my opinion. And those are the type of guys we want to play, especially with the competition we face. So there's a guy that does the right thing day in and day out. He's working, he's competitive, he wants to get better. And those are three big time goals that you described.
Well, we've seen some good netminders for the Mavericks. You go back to Ryan Massa and the Frozen Four run, and then Evan Weniger did so many good things before, you know, he graduates from the program. Now we see Isaiah Seville as a true freshman. I know a lot of excitement around this guy and what he could potentially do. And it looks like, again, just like talking about Joey Abate, seems like he's been getting more and more comfortable. What have you noticed from him?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I think just, again, the type of person he is. He's a competitive individual. He's working hard in practice. He wants to get better. Both goalies are competing extremely hard. And when you have that environment, it's necessary for everybody else to follow. And so he's been a real good addition to the program. I mean, he skates at an elite level in the net, and you know, he's making the saves he's supposed to make. And if you look at our league or the successful teams in college hockey, yeah, they all have very, very solid goaltending, you know, from Minnesota Duluth or whether it was Denver, or, you know, pick a team you want, and they're good in the back end. So again, just really nice to have a couple of players that are showing up every day, working and giving ourselves an opportunity to be successful there. And Isaiah's obviously doing that very, very well here for us early on.
And Gabs, two guys that I've been impressed with the last couple of years, and a guy that I'm not shocked to see leading the Mavs in points so far, and really just his ability to just his vision on the ice. Tristan Keck, he's got good speed, but we see him leading the team with 7 points. But also, when you look at the leading goal scorer in Zach Jordan, I know those were two guys that we talked about in the preseason that you were definitely going to need to kind of provide that lift from some of your more experienced players. Safe to say you've gotten that from them so far?
Yeah, I mean, Tristan Keck, I think, unfortunately, he's out right now. We lost him. He's got a broken foot. You can believe it. So we're going to lose him until probably Christmas or after Christmas. Anytime you lose your leading scorer, obviously that's a big blow, but that's an opportunity for somebody else to step up and fill his role. But, you know, just to speak positively about Tristan for a minute here, he's just, I mean, really growing his game. You know, he's always had that speed and, like you said, the vision and the touch around the net, but he really took his game to another level defensively as well. You know, he turned into our top penalty killer, probably one of our most reliable defensive forwards. He was out there playing the right way, and then he does have that speed and finishing ability that we all know about. So big loss for us, but, you know, I told him, hey, you're playing your best hockey and you'll get right back to that when you get healthy again. Yeah. And nice to take him to take that step. And then, like you mentioned, Zach Jordan as well, you know, just a big guy that I thought, you know, against Huntsville and a few times, he's just really learning how to use his size and track down pucks and take pucks to the net. And again, you know, those are guys, like you said, that are going to be keys to us being successful, that they can continue to elevate their game and take on other teams' top players and play the right way and contribute offensively when it presents itself.
Lastly, you guys had a chance to see Wisconsin 2 years ago in Madison. This is a team, I think, from that point on, really kind of got things going here in the last couple of seasons. What has changed from that group, and what do you expect challenge-wise from the Badgers this weekend?
I mean, on paper, they're probably a top 3 to 5 team in the country, you know, just obviously with, I think they have the 4 first round NHL draft picks, or I don't know if they have 12 or 12 NHL draft picks on their team or whatever it is. I mean, it's just an extremely talented group of players with some very, very high profile individuals. So, you know, we got to be prepared for that and be smart. But like I said, too, I like our guys, and I think we got some guys that are just going to go out there and play. And be excited for the competition, excited for the chance to show up and compete against these guys, and making sure we're focused on how we're supposed to play the game and be responsible and not, you know, make sure we're smart with the puck. And, you know, it should be a fun weekend here. So, but obviously a very talented team, but, you know, we're excited for the challenge as well.
I know you always want these guys to be kind of even keel, but did you notice a little extra intensity this week in practice, getting ready for this big matchup this weekend?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think you always got to have emotional control, you know, but I think there's, you got to have a ton of enthusiasm and excitement and energy and passion, be ready to roll. And I love that from day one with this group. I mean, these guys are excited to be at the rink. They're excited to play. They want to play. They want to get better. And there's no different this week. Really, really sharp this week in practice. I told the guys today just about 20 minutes ago in our post-game scout here that, you know, that's the best I've seen them look down low, both defensively and offensively. And it's fun when you can tell those guys, honestly, they're getting better and they're growing. So again, yeah, they're definitely jacked up for the weekend here.
UNO hockey coach Mike Gabinet as the Mavs take on 11th-ranked Wisconsin tomorrow night and Saturday at Baxter Arena. 7:07 is the puck drop for both of those games. And the Mavericks now ranked number 20 in the top 20 poll. Gabs, appreciate it. Best of luck. Look forward to seeing you out there tomorrow night.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
It's going to be a fun one out there. Wisconsin, they are good. This is a very good hockey team. And, you know, as Gabs mentioned a few weeks back when we talked to him, myself, a lot of people that follow this program just did not know what to make of what 2019-2020 would be for this hockey program. And he said it had been easy for him to sort of keep those expectations very tempered, but he didn't do that. He said he really likes his team. He thinks people are going to be kind of surprised how good this team comes out. And so far, it's been solid. 4-1-1. We'll see what they can do against a very good Wisconsin team coming to Omaha this weekend. All right, in the 4 o'clock, I'm going to be talking to Voice of the Huskers, Greg Sharp. We'll get back to our poll question of where you think Nebraska will finish these last three games. And your calls, 402-573-0590.